Welcome into a special Madhouse podcast mix-up something. We don't even know what to call this thing because it's so friggin' special. I am James Naveau from NBC5 Chicago and The Athletic Chicago. With me, as always, the bearded and resplendent Jay Zawoski. But it's not about us. It's about the guests that we have in the building today. Ladies and gentlemen, NHL.com and AthleticChicago.com's Brian Hedger and the man who I consider to be probably the best reporter in the entire freaking city, Scott Powers from The Athletic Chicago. Gentlemen, welcome to our show of craziness.
Yeah, it's funny. We talked about doing this. Was the first week of the season, then Brian Hedger, because he lives in a different state and covers the Blackhawks, didn't make it here in time, so this got delayed, and finally we were able to get
together. For the whole season, it got delayed.
Well, yeah. I know.
But we just never revisited
we did have
it.
This scheduled before. And
I was like, I was all stoked for it and everything. I got that day, I'll never forget that. That was opening night.
Yeah.
And
that was opening night. Wow. Mm-hmm.
I got stuck on I-65 North in Merrillville by, a construction worker got killed, so it's not funny, but it was 2 hours, like, just sitting there.
This is why you shouldn't cover the Blackhawks and live in Indiana.
I think he was going to stop there. He was going to stop. This is why
just don't live in Indiana.
This is why you shouldn't cover the Blackhawks.
Is this something you talk about with Mark Lazarus all the time? Because
he lives
in a different part of Northwest Indiana. He lives closer to the state line. He's like 30 minutes away. I'm, as Mark calls it, in the boonies. So.
I don't think you can tout Chicago or be a Chicagoan.
We get all our TV from Chicago.
You don't pay my taxes or anything.
We don't get TV from Indianapolis.
You elected Mike Pence governor. You did all sorts of things.
I didn't
that
elect
clearly
anybody.
Make Scott angry.
I did not elect Mike Pence.
You specifically.
Yes,
elected
it was me.
Mike Pence.
Just you.
It was me.
You were bullying people outside the polling stations. I remember your photo of you trying to come in that day, and that was That was brutal.
It was brutal.
That's the other thing he does is he tweets when he drives. And these are things that I'm working on to improve him a better
just
person.
Throw it out there.
I worry about Brian in so many ways.
By the way, Brian, this isn't actually a playoff podcast. This is an intervention.
Is this an intervention? Mm-hmm. Well, it's working.
Yeah.
It's working.
Your wife's outside.
He also dislikes small hockey players. He's got a real problem.
Oh, boy.
I'm like Q, okay? I'm like Q. Q tolerates them. He doesn't like them. Okay?
They're forced upon him.
Yes, they're forced upon him, and when they're good enough, he's like, all right, fine, you can go out there and play.
Look forward to the DeBrincat, Anthony Lewis, Vinny Hinostroza line next year.
Q loves him some Bickle and like those kind of guys. Or John Hayden now is the new one, who's like 6'2", big, muscular.
Be careful what you say. He's Jay's favorite player.
John Hayden?
No, I like John Hayden a lot. The first game, Pat Foley just, I don't want to be crude here, but he pretty much pleasured him for 60 minutes after I think he had 6 minutes of ice time in his debut.
Yep.
The whole second period was committed to John Hayden. It was ridiculous.
He's
just a slurp fest. And, you know, Foley and Q, they like the same kind of guys. I think we could.
They're old school.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're old school. They like that old school kind of big, rough, tough mentality. Scott hates that, by the way.
I don't. I think Hayden's. Yeah, I think he's fine.
Scott is the champion of small, and I should be actually the champion of small, because not only am I short, but I do have a daughter who has dwarfism.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm always championing the small, you know, can do mighty things. But, mm-hmm. like, in a hockey arena, sometimes I feel
they're limited, yes.
I just feel like they can get pushed around sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you, Kane and Panarin have had a really tough time this year.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they're horrible.
Clearly being short has just ruined them.
Those guys are terrible at hockey.
He sees Scott Darling is just like, oh, yes, that's my ideal hockey player.
Look
right
at those
now.
Long legs.
Well, Svedberg is his favorite player of all time. So him and Chara. So.
Forgot about
how
that.
How could Svedberg not be your
so,
favorite
so, like,
player?
During the World Baseball
they need to be
Classic,
able to skate, though.
That like 7 foot big. Tall Dutch guy was probably like Brian Hedger's like wet dream.
I actually have a funny story about the Darling thing. Did I ever tell you about this? About this year, he had I can't remember which game it was. He just had an amazing game. He's making just stand on his head type of saves all night, and we go to talk to him afterward, and I'm just thinking in my head, like, how am I want to get this guy to talk about like what he does to stay so loose, so limber and everything, and I'm like do you do yoga? And he's like, yeah, I do. And then he stopped the answer. I'm like, well, I want him to keep talking. And so it's me and Chris Cook will never ever let me down or let this go, and we're just standing there, and I just go, you're really flexible.
Oh,
like,
my
Scott
God.
Looks at me like,
just
like, backs how do away. I answer? He actually gave a good answer after that, but like Cook just wanted to smack me, I think, with like a rolled up newspaper.
But he always looks like that, though. Like, you Chris? See Chris Cook, yeah, it's always like, you're ruining me right now, and I want to hit you.
But it's because usually he's standing next to me, so
now, there you go.
I have that effect on people.
It all makes sense now.
I have that effect, so anyway.
Well, should we get into it? How do we want to handle this? We're doing this very loosey-goosey, but the playoff matchups are set, and I guess we could just kind of go through them and discuss them briefly, and we'll do the old radio trick of saving the Hawks and Predators for last.
Ooh.
For the old time spent listening thing. So where do you guys want to start? Let's start with, in my opinion, the least interesting matchup of the entire
yes.
playoffs.
Yeah.
The Boston Bruins and Ottawa Senators. Scott, Brian, James, your thoughts.
We'll make this quick.
Yes.
Just like the series might be. Actually, you know what? That series might go longer than you think, because I think the Bruins have been pretty good this year, but they have struggled in net. Mm-hmm. Haven't they? I mean, it's been basically the Tuukka Rask show, and then he kind of struggled a little bit. And then they had the coaching change, obviously, and another it worked out well for them because they weren't doing so hot when Claude Julien was there. But Ottawa was one of those sneaky teams, I think. I mean, you were saying earlier you think the – Jay, I mean, you were saying that you might think they might be out of there pretty soon. I don't know. I like Kyle Turris. I like Erik Karlsson, you know, and Chicago native Craig Anderson, right? Isn't he
yes.
their goalie?
Mm-hmm. I just don't know what it is about Ottawa. What is great about Ottawa? What's going to put them past Boston?
Parliament.
Obviously.
Well, of course. Yes. Of course. They've got the cat. And Erik Karlsson is a world-class defenseman, no doubt. And Kyle Turris is a nice player. But in the playoffs, you need star players to win, to take you very far. And I just don't see it on Ottawa's roster. Maybe it'll surprise, but
Bobby Ryan's still there. He's not bad. He's not
me,
great.
You're insinuating Erik Karlsson isn't a star.
I am, but he—I don't know if he's the kind of guy that can carry a team through a round. He's a defenseman.
It's hard for a defenseman to do that.
It is true.
You're right. Even an offensive defenseman, actually, mm-hmm. you might say especially an offensive defenseman,
right.
in the playoffs. You know, if you have some defensive liabilities or whatever.
How many teams changed the coach during the season or in the playoffs? Three.
Is that right?
Montreal.
Blues.
The Blues, Montreal, and Boston. Mm-hmm. I think that's...
Is that normal? I don't... Like,
that,
I don't
that does not seem normal,
no.
does it?
Yeah, you're usually not changing when things are going well. So, yeah, that's... I don't know. That does seem high.
That's
yeah.
three out of six. It's almost a quarter of your playoff teams.
We'll have the research department check it out and get
yeah.
back
yeah,
to
yeah,
it.
I don't know.
This is why we need an intern, man.
See, this is James's idea. Last year, we did the bracket challenge... NHL.com, and we still have yet to send out the winning prizes. I found the list today.
Good.
So I'm going to do it. And we were trying to sign up a league today, but NHL.com is not working.
Yeah, Brian.
So, it's all my fault. Just blame me again. Yeah, again.
It's not your fault. It's just a
no,
bad...
No, it is his fault.
By
I'm
proxy.
Not...
By proxy, you can...
I guess so. You are the most... Of all the people in this room, you are most to blame, I suppose.
There you go. That's one way to put it.
But once that's up, we'll get it going, and it'll be a Madhouse Podcast Bracket Challenge, and James says the winner should be an intern for a day.
I think it's a great idea.
And I think that would be him, the intern, him or her, telling my dog to shut up,
mm-hmm.
telling my daughter it's time for her segment.
Telling Hope it's okay to come down and flash you, I'll turn the other way.
Yes, that's happened a couple times, and my wife has just come downstairs and flashed me, and that's...
Should we have the Mexican lady come in as being a special guest that day?
Happened again. I'm not going to talk much about it, but
crying out
she's
loud,
got a thing
dude.
For me. It's unbelievable, but...
By the way, Thunder just went off. That's God being angry at you.
That's God agreeing with me. Anyway, so the this has a lot to do with the Senators and Bruins.
Yeah, you see, that's exactly how boring this series
I know,
is.
Right.
We've already tangented into something we talked about on Twitter today. Anyway, so we might make an intern thing happen as a prize. But anyway, I don't really have any other thoughts other than I'm picking Boston to win, and I just have no real reason why.
I just think when the playoffs are around, a guy like Patrice Bergeron makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Just like... You know, Jonathan Toews, and you could look at the numbers of both those guys and say, oh, they're probably a little bit lower than most people expect. But once the playoffs begin, you see those guys' values. And Brad Marchand.
Yeah.
Where did this come
from?
Where
did that come from?
Yeah, we played that game last week, named the top 10 scorers in the league, and it took a second for you to remember that he's up there.
How many did he end up with? Do we know?
I mean, he was pretty close last year, though, too, wasn't he? I mean, the last two years,
he was over 30, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He was over 30 this year.
Right? I thought he was, like, one short of 40 the last time we talked. Like, I don't know.
To the research department.
Yeah.
I'm on it right now as yeah. we speak.
All right.
Brian is our first intern.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm effing.
I'm sadly ill-prepared. Like, I was... I actually haven't looked at the other series that close.
Well, we've got the brackets right here.
I think it's perfect.
Scott has
fine.
Been focusing only on the Blackhawks. That is how he gets all this information.
Yeah.
Look, no one's looking for an in-depth breakdown of these right. Eastern Conference.
No, I think they're just looking for first thoughts, like first impressions. That's all.
I'm picking the Bruins because Zdeno Chara is very tall.
Okay.
That's why.
Got a pick?
It's my own.
I suppose I'll go with Boston as well.
There you go. There so we got go. A clean sweep for the Bruins.
Yes.
One
put
of the
your
most...
money down.
Now, there's two matchups in the East I'm really intrigued about. That is Pittsburgh and Columbus and Washington and Toronto.
Yes.
I think Washington and Toronto is going to be awesome. It might be short because Toronto, I think we can maybe all agree.
Some defensive liability.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And they've been really impressive. The young players have all been great, but Caps have a lot of experience in not winning. But they've got a lot of playoff experience, and it just might be. It sucks for the Leafs have to run into them their first year. They're really significant again. It's a tough matchup.
Unless they beat them, then it's like Katie bar the door type of thing with that. Yeah, you know, I was just looking. I was telling Scott before we got over here that yesterday I was doing all this kind of research about teams with rookies in the playoffs, and I started totaling points, like rookie points, rookie scoring around the league. And obviously the Leafs are way ahead of everyone else, but I mean, to see the numbers themselves were ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, like before yesterday's game, they had over 100 and some odd goals, and then they had over 300 points combined just from their rookies. The next highest, second place in rookie scoring was like almost 200 points less. I mean, the Hawks were third at 105 points with their rookies, which is doing pretty good out of 30 teams or whatever. But, I mean, you could have – and I figured it out. You could almost add up second, third, and fourth and equal how many – like the points that the Leafs had.
That's incredible.
That is amazing. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow.
Well, you draft that high year after year.
That's
and eventually
said,
you get good. Right, Oilers?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I want – For me, and Hadra and I debate this, I like when the best team wins. Like I don't like all like the parody in hockey. I like the NBA often because the best team wins, and I feel like that's it can be competitive in the championship, but I think the Capitals are the best team in hockey this year. So I tend to hope that they get to the final and that sort of thing, where I don't like the – and I guess I know it's fun and all those things, but I feel like the regular season should matter in some way where the eighth seed doesn't win, And I know things can – there are reasons why a lower seed will win and that sort of thing. But, yeah, for me, I guess I've always liked that 162-game season or 82-game season in all those ways matter. And I know the Capitals were the most impressive team this season throughout. And Toronto's intriguing because of the youngsters, and I'm sure that's a team that we'll see, I imagine, from years to come. I guess I like the Capitals because they were the best team in the regular season.
I kind of like where you're going with that, but I kind of hate lazy narratives. So that's why I hate the Washington sucks in the playoffs. They're going to lose inevitably, yada, yada. I want to see that go away. Yeah. I'm tired of hearing Alex Ovechkin's a loser and never wins anything.
Yeah.
I want that lazy narrative to go away. So I'm sort of rooting for Washington to get to the final, too, for that reason. I want that narrative to go away and for me never to have to hear it again. That would be really nice.
It's not fair in hockey either. It's such a team sport. I mean, obviously, Ovechkin controls a goal or two a game, but this is not the NBA where it's one guy runs the show, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. Kane and Taves have championships because of everyone else,
Correct.
It's such a team sport. So I blaming anything on Ovechkin or any individual is just it doesn't take in the bigger picture.
That's why I think the NHL has actual parity, where when you look at these 16 teams involved in the playoffs, there's only one or two that would really shock you if they won a cup, right? I think Toronto would be a big shock. I think Ottawa would be a big shock, and Calgary,
yep,
and Edmonton. Mm-hmm. So four of the 16.
You think Edmonton would be a shock if
they
won
the
cup?
Yeah.
I think if they won the cup, that would be a big shock.
They have issues in goal.
True.
They have a good goalie, but he's basically played every single game. I'm a little, wondering how he's going to hold up in this playoffs after he's played basically every game.
I kind of like that fact that I feel like any team can win, and any of those, aside from those four, you would say are probably deserving of legitimate cup content conversation. I talked about the Predators in our season preview. I picked the Predators to win the Stanley Cup.
Yes, you did.
And they have not – they've underachieved, I guess, in a lot of people's minds. They got off to a terribly slow start, and we'll get into this later, obviously, as we preview the series. But That wouldn't shock me if the Predators won the Cup. If Pekka can play, you know, the level of hockey he's used to playing, why not? They've got all the weapons. They've got everything they need. They're certainly deep enough. It's just, you know, it's a matter of goaltending and getting your hot players hot at the right times, I suppose. But
yeah.
Well, I guess it's also the bigger – and what other thing I hate is overtime hockey and shootouts. And it's – when the Predators, all the other stats, you know, if you take away their overtime losses and shootout losses, I mean, there's – I think it was like 6 points different than the Blackhawks. I mean, there's so many numbers where it looks like one team – even Corsi, I think Nashville finished fifth in Corsi. If you look at 5-on-5 goal differential, there's I think it was 6 goals with the Blackhawks. I mean, all the stats, if you read between the lines, there's not that much of a difference, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, especially Blackhawks, I think, had 13 points or whatever it was from 14 points from overtime victories. Like, the things that matter that ended up making a team look so much different in the end were, I think, a lot of reasons on paper and also on performance based on some of those other things. I guess we're already jumping into the Blackhawks Predators series, which seems like a natural thing. But
it happens.
That's I think the Predators are they're an elite team too, right? I mean, that's if things do click, and I think it's not just them getting lucky. I think there's some things that say they can be a tough opponent.
Definitely. Well, let's wrap up the Eastern Conference. Why don't we just make our picks?
Sure.
And then we'll move on to breaking down the Hawks and. Hawks and Preds. So
I was looking up Marchand, right? And that was supposed to
yeah.
be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Marchand finished with 85 points. He had 39 goals and 46 assists in 80 games.
I think that's pretty good.
I think it's ridiculous. A couple of years ago, he was seen as it was him and Shaw.
Shaw were the same conversation.
They're the same player.
What was his numbers last year?
I'll have to look that up.
No, see, he didn't look that up.
Card up again.
I didn't have that up. I'm looking at the total.
Oh, he was looking at the NHL leaders and
yes.
making Blackhawks
and I have
fans
a question
sad.
About that, by the way, because where we go? Come on. God,
we'll move the predictions. Well,
I can just edit this all
could
out.
Take
I get all this dead air. All this.
He had
37
goals last year and 61 points. So he really upped it in the assists category this year. Before that, the year before that, 24, 18, and 42. Mm. So. Since 2014-15, he's really picked it up as a scorer.
There's only one explanation. Steroids.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah, with Brad Marchand. I did have a question here about the stats now that I was looking at them, the leaders. We kept – everyone was talking about how Panarin finished 10th. They haven't listed – is it because of ties?
Tied, yep.
That's what it is. So Kane tied for the second, and then another guy.
Mm-hmm. It's also only listed among forwards because there's a defenseman in the top 10.
Yeah, I think Brent Burns was in the top 10.
Brent Burns is in the top. There
yeah, so that – yeah, that'll –
wow, Brent Burns was 76 points as a defenseman. All right, so, hey, question answered.
I love that guy, Brent Burns.
The beard or the guy?
The whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah, the whole
package.
All right. So we're wrapping up the Eastern Conference.
All right,
sorry
so
to get us distracted.
We all picked Boston. I think we're all picking the Caps, correct?
Yes.
Pittsburgh. Yes, Pittsburgh all around, everybody. Everybody. Yes. I see some hesitation
I'm
from
picking
you.
Columbus.
Really? See, I'm on the fence about this one.
I'm going to pick Columbus.
I'm picking Columbus because of Sergei Bobrovsky and all the injuries the Penguins have on their blue line.
That is,
I think Columbus can pull an upset.
And you know what? Columbus has got that whole chip on the shoulder mentality as well because they feel like nobody's paying attention to them.
We put it there.
Because they're in Columbus, right?
They're great this year.
We put it there because before the season, I excoriated John Tortorella. Just was like, he's going to get fired. He sucks.
Did he change as a coach? Do you think he learned anything from the World Cup?
Probably a little bit. I think guys like that, though, they come in, they work right away, but there's a shelf life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'll never have a Quenville-like run anywhere he goes.
He's the Tom Thibodeau of the NHL.
Well, I don't think Tibbs is such a jerk. You know, he's a hard ass, but he's not a...
What about Scott Skiles, then?
Similar. I think that's a good
comp. He definitely was that guy that like wore out his welcome in Chicago.
Tortorella is more accomplished, though. I think he's sort of the modern-day Mike Keenan.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'll give you that. And this conversation is what makes Q so amazing, though, because he still kind of has that hard ass to him a little bit, obviously. He gets the Q stare.
Right.
He puts people in the Q doghouse, and you don't ever get out of it. But he's been here forever, and he keeps winning, and they keep changing the roster around him, and people just keep adjusting. I mean, he hasn't burned out yet. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they haven't.
Yeah, but he doesn't anger, like, his star players. I mean, all the players that play for him respect him and love him. It's I mean, you can healthy scratch a Nick Leddy and those type of guys and guys that need maybe. Right. Yeah, I don't. I think the guys that play for him love him though. You know.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's part.
But he's
of
he's a, what makes he's also a good coach friendly, player friendly coach where there's not long.
He's got
practices.
Like that. Right. Yeah, he's got that.
There's
weird
not
mix.
A lot of.
You don't see that a lot. Is what
I think
saying.
It's a respect though. I don't. I think there's a difference between the two coaches in that how they coach and how they're respected by it. They do. I don't think Quinville wears out his welcome.
Well, I'm just saying that's the hard balance to strike if you're a coach, right?
Definitely.
Like you are either a lot of times you see guys who are either or.
Right.
They're either like the nice guy and the, you know, player's guy, or they're the jerk, you know? And you don't see guys who can kind of toe that line both sides. And Q, you're right, Scott. Q is one of those guys.
I think Q's done a good job too of adjusting over the years, especially this year. A lot of people said, oh, we're going to be a month in and the Hawks are going to go out and sign four veteran forwards for the minimum and make him happy. And he's been year to year to year. You see him make adjustments and just sort of the way he coaches a team. And he has to, because his roster is changing so much. I think that that's an underrated aspect of him as a coach, is his ability to adjust himself for the better of the team. And you're right. The way he takes care of veteran players and the players in general, he doesn't overwork them with too many practices. If he's sensing they're tired, they get a day off. And you're right. It's a delicate balance of having the respect, commanding the room, but keeping your players happy. And he's a master of it.
Yep.
I think I need to ask the question of these guys since they're here. We talked about this last week. Do you think Joel Quenneville has a shot at winning the Jack Adams this year?
That's a good question, because I think he should be in contention every year, to be honest with
you. Right, but usually it goes to the underdog guy.
Well, right, and well, here's what usually happens is they have a great season, and people just kind of go, yeah, it's the Blackhawks, you know, anybody could coach those guys. You know,
right.
Give me Taves, give me Kane, give me whatever. And then so he just kind of gets overlooked or pushed aside, you know, in that conversation. But you're right, this year – different because this year pretty much the entire bottom six changed. You know, this is like a whole new thing here that he had to deal with. If it's going to depend on whether national writers realize that or not, or whether they still look at it, especially the Canadian guys who look at it and be like, oh, I still got Tave, still got Kane, still got Panarin, still got Keith, you know, all those kind of guys. That's going to be the thing he always has to get over.
All right, so you guys are picking the Blue Jackets.
Yep.
I'm picking Pittsburgh. Scott, you're picking the Pens as well. And now we move on to Montreal and the Rangers. Another series I don't really care about.
I don't really have a huge amount of opinions on this. Like, I think Montreal probably should win, but I'm not, like, sold, like, hardcore on that.
They're both very similar in that they have really good goaltending and a lot of good players, but no one that's like, that guy's awesome. Shea Weber, I think, will qualify. But again, that's a defenseman. It's also a guy in the later parts of his career, not the same player he was in Nashville. So I don't know. It's tough. It's sort of a coin flip for me. I'll just say Montreal because I think Carey Price is better, assuming health.
What do we think about the Canadiens becoming kind of a thug team?
That was weird. The trade deadline,
isn't it weird? Like they went out and just got a bunch of muscle, and like, and that's totally not the Canadiens' history, right?
No.
I mean, you know, Guy Lafleur and all this, all the kind of stuff. Now it's just like we're gonna go out there and just ram you into the boards, and we're gonna like give you the elbow, a little face wash, and
well, we've all seen how well it's worked for Anaheim over the years,
right? Exactly. Well, I mean, I guess that's what Bergeron wants over there. I keep pounding the table. Can you guys hear this? Can you hear that?
It's not picking up that much. So
see?
It's annoying.
Bad.
It's
Scott.
Scott's sitting there
Scott
stewing.
Is very annoyed.
I'm watching him do it.
Pounding the table. I'm a hand talker, okay?
Are you Italian?
No. Well, no. I'm a mutt.
There
so
you go.
I might be part
you might
Italian,
be a little
you
bit.
Never know.
Actually, you know what? Now that you mention it, that was showing up very loudly.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Whether or not, just lie to him and tell it.
There's a big spike in the volume
there. We are
there.
Never inviting him back again.
You're the professional, Jay. You'll figure out how to erase it.
These
right?
are things I deal with sometimes.
Yeah.
Is this something sometimes? That happens in the press box of the UC when you guys are recording after games? Him just pounding on the table when he mixes his candy and his popcorn?
Usually he's complaining about me eating things during the podcast. I get hungry, man. We're there all day.
That's this guy clacking away on his laptop as it's recording him.
Right.
Mr.
See, at first I did it unintentionally, and then I started doing it just to piss Jay off.
See?
So.
Well, it works.
Mm-hmm.
No,
I'll work on my hand pounding on the table. There we go.
Matt Spiegel and Jason Goff do it all the time. They're both table pounders.
They're
when
table
they wanna,
pounders, see?
They want to elaborate their point, they slam that table, and I just want to kill them.
And you just want to pound their faces into the table.
Right. Let's just do one final one.
You should just give them a pillow. Yeah. Just put a pillow on the thing. You can pound the pillow with your hand.
That's a great idea. Or get, padded countertops.
There you go.
Yeah, put them in a padded room.
See, now we started as therapy for him. Now it's to you because now we're talking about your your radio folks that you want to apparently pound into tables.
Today was great. The guys were on remote, and I was not. It was a wonderful day.
Yep, you just got to hang out at Stetson Avenue and just chill out.
Yep, just chill out. All right, we're on to the Western Conference.
Okay.
At long last.
Wait, did we make a pick?
Yeah, I made mine, which is all that matters. Montreal, because I like Carey Price.
Okay. You know what? It's hard to pick against the team that has Carey Price in net. I'm going to go, though, with the Rangers.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the Rangers, too.
I'm going with Montreal.
Wow, we're split.
Yeah.
The podcast.
Yes. Partnership.
Split.
That's how we make up.
That's right.
Darn right. Yeah, we argue about stuff, and then we do that.
And then we agree and high five. Mm-hmm. And the dad jokes will come later.
Mm-hmm. Scott and I never make up.
All right, let's do the West. What is the least interesting matchup in the West? Are we going to say Anaheim-Calgary?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty boring.
I don't know. St. Louis-Minnesota could be kind of boring, too.
I think that's going to be a good one. How about San Jose and Edmonton? I can't wait to watch Edmonton play.
Yeah. I'll be asleep.
But, yeah, exactly. It's going to be like on the West Coast.
Screw you guys. I'll be up for that.
Yeah.
No, that could be a really – here's the deal, though. You're going to have the two – it's the battle of the oddly lit arenas.
Oh, yeah.
You've got the pitch black. Is it the HP Pavilion still?
No, it's –
SAP Center?
SAP Center.
That's what I call it. It's easier. Rolls off the tongue like SAP. And then you have the weirdly, halogen lit – Edmonton building.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's held by all the orange in there.
Yeah.
Scott, did you go to that building this year?
I did not.
You didn't go to Edmonton. No, I knew you went.
But they've got the great ice.
Yeah. They've got the great ice still.
I'm going to pick Edmonton because I just kind of want it to happen.
I'm going to pick San Jose because I hate Edmonton's jerseys, and I'm petty.
Do you really hate?
He's mad about the orange.
How can you hate the
Oilers
jerseys?
I hate the orange jerseys.
I like the orange
them. I hate them. The blue jerseys are where it's at. The orange jerseys look like crap.
Like, you mean... Which ones are you talking about?
Their new home jerseys, the new orange. I hate them.
You don't like the orange because you think the orange is too highlighted or something?
Bingo. The blue is classic. The blue looks cool with the logo. I like the blue better.
But when they were winning all those cups with Gretzky, wasn't it with the orange?
But
and
they
the blue?
Were mostly blue with the orange shoulders. They flipped it now.
There you go.
I know what you're saying. I don't know if that's a reason to not pick a team, though.
No, you know what? You're right. If I was picking based on talent alone, I would probably... lean San Jose, though, just because I like the experience. I like the veteran guys that they've got. The thing, though, is just, man, Edmonton's got some talented players, and they could really, light up a series, I think, if they really get rolling. So it's actually a really tough pick for me. I'm leaning San Jose, but it's really close.
It is. I'm going to go with San Jose just for the reasons you mentioned. They've got so many great two-way forwards on that team, I think the D is strong enough to get it done. Edmonton... that seems to be good for a long time. Mm-hmm. They've still got to add some pieces, especially on the blue line. If they can add it's easy to say, but a Nicholas Hjalmarsson type, or a poor man's Nicholas Hjalmarsson, that would go so far for them.
Connor McDavid for Brent Seabrook. Do it.
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know if I'd do that. He seems a little soft to me. You know how you're triggering me, though, with the Seabrook hatred.
I know.
It makes me mad.
I know.
It's not his fault. He has a bad contract.
I know.
Don't hate the player. Hate the contract.
Really?
But, yeah, I think San Jose, just because of their veteran experience, they're gonna win this one. I think 5 or 6, too. I think it might be quick.
I don't think it's going to be quick. I think it'll be 6. 6 sounds good.
Yeah, I know. I think San Jose, too. I just hope McDavid shows off. You know, think it's... especially for the casual fan who maybe tunes in the playoffs where they don't. It's just he's the future of the NHL and probably the present, too, right? Mm-hmm. I think for him and Matthews, and I think that's always the enticing thing is to see these new young kids. And, McDavid's something special. So hopefully he plays well. And I think San Jose is a better team. But, McDavid's something, huh?
So are you picking San Jose?
I am picking San Jose, yes.
I think we're going to make it 4-for-4. I'm going to pick San Jose for the same kind of reasons. Experience factor. Todd McClellan is a very underrated coach. I think he is a really good coach.
Been around. He knows a little bit about the Sharks, too.
It's
yes,
not
he
just
does.
Because he's a great quote, either. I always sometimes pick coaches
Who's a better quote between him and John Cooper?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think it's probably Cooper. But McClellan's up there, and those guys are both – Cooper was
Canadian?
Never, yes. Cooper was never an assistant with Mike Babcock, but he, like, Babcock found him basically in Michigan. Like, he was, as he was coming up the coaching chain in Michigan, Babcock kind of identified him as this up and coming young, you know, star coach and befriended him. So they're friends. And then McClellan did coach for Babcock. And I'm not pounding the table now. I'm just kind of talking with my hands.
Tapping it.
I'm tapping it ever so gently. So I'm going to pick San Jose, but. But, you know,
longest explanation ever.
McDavid
had no
is
sense in
just amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see the move he did yesterday at like 100 million miles an hour?
He is unreal.
I mean, it's one thing to put the puck behind your back through the, your legs for a shot kind of a thing, but to do it at full speed going right at the net was just unreal. I mean, he didn't score on it or anything, but. That's one of those ones you look at and go, oh, my God. Like, nobody else in the league can do that.
I think that it's funny. A lot of these guys have the same issue is they all have no personality whatsoever. Taves finally has come out of his shell a little bit this year.
Yep.
And it was almost like a concerted effort. Like, I'm going to be more – I'm going to Instagram stuff and do some charity things. And Crosby's kind of a dud. And McDavid is just kind of a mouth breather, and it's like, God, they need a star that can.
Those guys are all Canadian.
You've got one, PK Subban, and apparently the league is not ready for him.
Can I point out the fact that I get really annoyed by people who criticize Taves for the stuff that he talks about? Like, they call him like boring because he talks about like healthy eating and exercise and all that. And it's
dude.
You want these guys to have personality, and then they show it, and then you're like, oh, you're boring. You suck. It's really? Are you kidding?
I'm saying before this year, he started doing that.
No, this is, like, a thing I've noticed among fans especially, not necessarily among, like, you know, pundits like, you know, you guys. I don't know if I'm really a pundit, but.
Really a pundit. Pundit.
Yes. It annoys me that people, like, want players to show personality, and they want them to kind of be themselves, and then they are, and then they're like, oh, well, that's kind of lame. You're a healthy eater. That's lame. Ooh, look at you,
your health on me.
Earth boy. Ooh. Like, it's so annoying.
Go drive away in your Tesla.
Exactly.
Right.
Like,
he drives a Chevy. Chevy Cruze.
Probably a Chevy Volt, would imagine.
He does have a Tesla. At least he did before. I don't know. Maybe he changed.
Cue up the breaking news.
Maybe it's a Volt.
Yeah, Hedger's got some breaking news here.
Seen him drive a Tesla. I know that for a fact.
Well,
there you go.
Named after the greatest band of all time, so it's fun.
Yes. They're awesome cars, by the way. But I'll never be able to afford one.
I saw one yesterday.
You don't like them?
I think it's funny that Jay's like, named after the greatest band of all time.
Tesla. A big Tesla fan?
No, I just don't think they're the greatest band of all time.
You're wrong. The Beatles would tell you you're wrong.
I wasn't going to say the Beatles.
All right. Well, now you've piqued my interest.
I was just going to say something trollish about U2. I didn't really have a thought on this.
The band U2?
Yeah.
Oh, they're terrible.
I thought he said U2, like YOUTOO.
Or maybe I should say something trollish about Pearl Jam. Maybe that'll be the.
Oh, boy.
Because, I mean, that's what every.
That's where it just all goes.
See, this is
Mark
the generational.
Lazarus is in the ceiling
this
tiles.
This is the generational gap.
Be careful, buddy.
The generational gap between reporters are the ones who identify and love Bruce Springsteen.
You're right.
And the ones that love Pearl Jam. Like, there is like a general.
I'm neither, so.
Line.
I know. Scott's all Irish music, pretty much.
The Chieftains all day.
Indie music.
Freaking Scott has
rap
he has the most eclectic music taste out of just about anybody I've seen on
did
the internet.
Did he give you the CD as well?
No, of course not.
Okay. Scott does this for the Beat Writers every year, and I think it's awesome. He puts together his favorite like indie tunes or just whatever tunes it is on a CD, and, you know, and it says, you know, Powers Picks of 2016 or whatever. And he gives them to us, you know, around Christmas.
That's awesome.
It is awesome.
Wow.
It is awesome.
I'll give it to you guys. I'll put you guys in a list.
What's funny is, we did it 2 years ago, and I hate to admit this, but I don't think I listened to a single song.
That's brutal,
that was
dude.
Awful. I'm Man. Sorry, Scott. Sorry. This year I made I did listen to some. I popped in. Okay, I put the CD in the thing in the car, and I had my kids in the back, and he popped in some. He had some rap song I'd never heard of, and it was like every other word.
It's
was
eclectic
like,
stuff.
It was like F this, F that. My kids are like, oh, this is great.
This is the best song ever.
Yeah.
Like, where'd you get this stuff?
I was just about to say, man, you've got a commute. Like, how on earth have you not listened to what this man laboriously puts together for you?
I did this time, and it was funny. So it was a drive home from a Hawks game. It was the night he gave us the thing, and I put the CD in, and I'm like, this time, I'm going to listen to this thing from start to finish. There's like 18 songs. I got like an hour drive. I'm going to listen to the whole thing. I got done at the end, and I'm like, next podcast I have to talk to Scott because I'm a little worried about Scott Powers. Like I'm a little.
I think
worried
there's
about
a Leonard Cohen song that finished it, and I think that's what it was.
That'll do it.
The Leonard Cohen about darkness and
that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Take your pick.
You want the darkness? We'll put out the flame. You know, that kind of thing. Oh yeah, I like it now. That's like one of my favorite songs, and my daughter loves it now too. So you have ruined us both. Thank you.
See, I don't know if Scott's like me. Like, I listen to other people's pain to deal with mine. You know, it's like, all right, these people have put this into words well that I will never be able to do it like this. So it helps me. It helps me deal. It helps me cope by hearing other people. Wow, it's like, damn, at least I'm not Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
Maybe you and I will start having therapy sessions together.
Yeah, so now, every once in a while, I keep listening to the thing, and I am finding songs I really like now that I had no idea even existed before. So now I'm texting Scott, and I'll be like, number 13 is pretty good. I have no idea what the song is called.
But for him, I'll bet that feels awesome to you.
Yeah, I did it 1 year digitally, and it didn't feel as good. I like music A and B. I like sharing the CDs. So actually, if you guys are interested, I will be gladly making them because I like introducing people to stuff
list,
new music.
It's a good CD. It's a good one. The 2016 was.
Now, what I want to know is, do you have the CD stamper? Where you like design?
No, I put my
take us behind the scenes.
No, I put my own. Yeah, my penmanship's really bad, but I do write them out myself. So there's not a whole lot of them. So
used to get those stickers for your CDRs, and it would like melt in your CD player in your car, and it's like like glue coming out.
I remember that.
Yeah, I had to
we're
stop.
Dating ourselves a little.
All
bit
right,
here.
Back to hockey.
The kids have tuned up.
Speaking of pain, let's talk about the Ducks Flames series.
Yes, we're moving on from Oilers and Sharks.
Yes, so we all made our picks in that one, so I feel comfortable moving on to Anaheim Calgary. I mean, I'm picking Anaheim here. I think they're probably the second best team in the West, I would argue right now, behind the Blackhawks. And I really like the group that they've put together, and I think that Calgary's got a lot of great young talent, really interesting team. I think they could be really dangerous for years to come. Battle of Alberta in the years to come is going to be really good.
Yep.
With guys like Gaudreau and Monahan on Calgary. And
Kachuk.
Kachuk. Good Lord, they're loaded. But I'm still picking Anaheim here. I'm actually going to pick Anaheim in 7. I think this could be a really good series.
All right, I think if there is a series poised for a upset, it might be this one. I think a lot of people have sort of overlooked Calgary as, they're too young, they're too inexperienced. They got a lot of young, great talent, and we've seen from Matthew Tkachuk that he's mature beyond his years hockey-wise. Dude's not afraid of anybody, not afraid of anything, and he's got some good genes, too. So I think that Calgary might pull it off. If I'm putting money on it, I'm picking Anaheim, but for the purposes of this podcast, I'm going to pick Calgary in 7 just because I really like where they're headed. I think Johnny Gaudreau is a great hockey player, and that's the sort of guy, what we talked about earlier with Montreal and New York and Ottawa, not really having a star offensive player that can carry him. I think Gaudreau could be that guy for Calgary. So I'm going to pick Calgary. Knowing that if there was cash on this, my pick would be Anaheim.
Fair enough.
I think this is one of those series, too, where it's I guess almost every series, the goaltending is going to – it's about who the guys are proven. And until you prove yourself, it's – you know, when you look at Minnesota or whomever down the line who just – the goaltending hasn't proven itself in the playoffs. And whether Elliott's is that guy for Calgary or not, you know, whether what he can prove in the playoffs. And when you're thinking of the Blackhawks and just Crawford and what an advantage they may have there in the first round and throughout. So I guess that's one of the questions for me is with the goaltending, I guess both those teams a little bit, right? I think, like you said, hopefully it's a fun series. And again, it's those young players that you see that promise. And at some point, you know, these guys aren't all necessarily all rookies. It's not – I mean, it took Kane and Taves a couple of years to kind of figure out, and then they got to the playoffs. And so maybe the fact that, you know, what Gaudreau's in his second, third year now is –
I think third.
Boy, maybe third or fourth.
Third.
Yeah. So some of these guys are, and it's not like they're exact rookies. So I think some of that, I mean, there's some of that factor too, where these guys have been around the block a little bit. So I'll take Anaheim, but I think could be an enticing series.
Is Tkachuk going to start the series by fighting Getzlaf off the first
play?
He'll send a message and turn momentum right away.
Mm-hmm. It's like going to prison for that guy. Like he's going pick out the biggest, baddest guy and just fight him and show that you're just as bad as everybody else. Is that what his whole theory there?
I guess
was
so.
With the, Kings.
They need him to play though. See, that's yeah. It's funny. It's kind of who was I talking to? Maybe it was Jordan Tutu. Who said that, you know, like Q's feeling on fighting is kind of like, I appreciate it, but you're kind of, you know, you're not on the ice. You know, I'd rather have you hit a guy or something behind, you know.
Well, it looks like when Hartman was on the second line and he got the fight. Like, there's time and places, and then you also have to understand what your role is on the team. You
right.
know, like Tutu on the fourth line, ultimately they can afford to not have him on the ice. But if you're in a significant role, I mean, you gotta be thinking about that too. Ultimately, you're going to hurt the team by not. And Hartman was playing with second line center, I think, right. The game that he got, he fought that one time, and I think he picked up another penalty
this
later.
This
too.
This is not the 1980s. This is not
Robert
and Joe Koser going crazy on people.
And yeah. Finally, I mean, there's so many fewer fights in the playoffs
there
too.
Is.
Yeah.
Well, even in hockey in general, but especially the playoffs. As far as this series goes, I mean, I'm gonna go with the Ducks in this one, mainly because I mean, I guess it's gonna hinge on the health of Patrick Eves. Who would ever say that, by the way, right? Like when he was
yeah.
I used to cover the Red Wings, you know, for NHL.com when I was covering the Hawks mm-hmm. as well as going back and forth, and Eves was like, I mean, he was a fourth line player. I mean, yeah. as far as that's how they used him, it was him and Drew Miller, and that was it. They never got off the fourth line and then he always got hurt. He goes to Dallas and they use him in the top six role and he responds. I mean, if he's healthy, what an addition that was at the trade deadline for the Ducks. I mean, this is a guy, he scored 30 goals this year. I think he was approaching 30. He was way over 20. Mm. At the trade deadline, he was over 20, and I know that he had some goals for Anaheim after the trade deadline. So you add that guy for like $1 million. I mean, it's $1 million guy. So he adds to your offense. They already have Vermette as well. I like him as like a third-line center. They have Getzlaf. I like their depth down the middle. I like their depth up front.
And that wins cups.
It absolutely does. And so, but that said, they're going to have to get some more goal scoring out of Ryan Getzlaf this year. I mean, last year he had all those assists, or 2 years ago, remember he had all those assists mm-hmm. and didn't score a goal. That can kind of hurt you as well. But I'm going to go with the Ducks in this one. I think that they're going to. It could be a really physical series
oh, yeah.
as well.
Yeah. Well, they also have to keep Corey Perry going because he went through that really long stretch without a goal too. They need him to produce if
Correct.
They're going to win.
Yep.
All right, well, now we move on to Minnesota and St. Louis.
Yawn. Sorry,
really?
I'm like one of the only people who thinks this series is going to be a dud, but I do. Like, Minnesota has played like crap down the stretch. I know St. Louis has played pretty well, but, like, the Mike Yo Bowl. Like, who? I'm not tuning in for that. Sorry, like, I think it might be an okay series, but it's not one that, like, jumps out to me, like, say, Washington-Toronto, where I think it's going to be fast-paced and awesome, or Pittsburgh-Columbus, where I'm thinking to myself, God, this playoff format sucks, that two of the three best teams in the East are playing each other in the first round. This one I'd probably rank, like, maybe sixth out of the playoff
wow.
matchups in terms of my watchability and, like, my excitement level.
Interesting.
I'm definitely in a minority on that, but I can't shake that feeling. I don't know why, but
I'm excited about it. I just have trouble picking this one because I think Minnesota is clearly the better team, but they've been mm-hmm. such trash down a stretch.
Just, I mean, it all, like, the tires completely fell off.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like a psychological thing almost as much as a physical thing. And that's, see, once that happens, you're screwed. And I just don't know. The Blues have finished hot. The Wild have finished ice cold. And if we were picking this game a month ago, it would be an easy pick Minnesota for me. But the way they've been playing down the stretch, it's tough. I still think they're the better team, so I'm going to go with them. But it's more of a coin flip for me than I thought it would be through most of this season.
Yeah, how much did Hanzel play, I guess? How much did he –
He was ill
yeah.
at one point. I knew that. Well, that was the other thing with Minnesota. They went through that whole – did they have mumps? Did they have something else thing? I mean, it went through the whole mm-hmm. locker room kind of thing. I think that may have affected them as well physically. But, yeah, I have to look up the – I have to get on my phone.
Well, I guess I was thinking, too, like a bigger picture. Like, who was
– Hanzel started playing better recently.
Who improved at the deadline?
He played 20 games with Minnesota.
And the last few, like the last 10, he was actually – he kind of working his way into the mm-hmm. thing.
Because I don't – you know, I – I don't know if the Blackhawks improved at the deadline. You know, like I was when you look at some of the numbers, like
on paper they did, but
yeah, Dude struggled, and you know, obviously Yurko's not playing, and I was just wondering how, because Hanzel was supposed to be like this, the way to complete Minnesota, right? I mean, mm-hmm. he was thought he was going to make them deeper down the middle, and him not playing probably impacted that. But Minnesota, yeah, it didn't play well down the stretch. The other way, Blues seemed like they hit all the right buttons down it too, you know, and they just picked up what's his name too, right? They signed from Russia.
Sabatka.
Is Sabatka? Yeah.
Did they get him?
Yeah, they did.
Played yesterday, scored a goal.
Yep, he came back.
Yeah, and that's and a I guess pretty big addition. It's always the bigger picture with Minnesota, where the Wild have yet to prove that they can do
You're
this,
right.
And the fact that it's trending in this direction, and you know, as good as Devan Dubnyk's been in the regular season.
He struggled down the stretch.
Yeah, and then
he did. Did any of that stem from what Bruce Boudreau did here in Chicago, where he pulled him like 10 seconds into the game?
I don't know. I think it was already. That was even a while ago.
I felt like
still.
I was trending in that direction already.
I think people read into
that. Couldn't help though.
Yeah. No. I don't know. Ultimately, I mean, if you're a goalie and you get that affected psychologically, there's other issues there, you know, like it was goals happen fast, and I think it was just the reaction. And I mean, the thing is, Minnesota played so well at other times this season, right? Like it's I don't know. I guess I could see that series going either way, and it's funny because I could see any of those four teams, even the Hawks and Predators, coming out of there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who's clicking, and they've all shown signs that they can play really well, and they all have certain deficiencies. Yeah, I guess I tend to think the Wild are going to figure it out, but that might be a dumb assumption too, right? For now I'm picking the Wild, but I think it is an interesting series. And I Tarasenko is one of my favorite players to watch. I think he's a lot of fun, and I get the Wild, but I guess I wouldn't be surprised if it goes the other way.
I guess it does have the potential to be kind of a snooze fest if Mike Yeo's style of hockey kind of dominates the series.
Yeah.
Remember when he was with the Wild? And mm-hmm. I mean, those were actually not really fun games. There was the one series where the Hawks actually swept him, and the hockey wasn't too bad, actually. It was kind of up and down a little bit. He kind of opened it up a little bit more, but he got swept. There was that – it was the year before. I get them all mixed up now. But there was the one year where basically the Wild gave the Hawks their toughest challenge. And in that series, I mean, you could just watch it from the press box, from TV, whatever. You would just watch it. The puck would go in the Minnesota end, and, like, it was almost like wherever you are, if you were a Wild player, you had to, like, kind of converge under the front of the net. Yeah. All five guys would, like, be in front of the net, and there was nowhere. There's no shooting lanes, nothing. And it was boring. Like, there was just no – there was no goals, anything. But that's his whole –
You got to hang.
That's his whole thing.
That's how you hang with a more talented team.
So if he does that, I could see it being kind of like a boring series as far as the actual play. But this has some potential, though. I mean, when you look at Minnesota, it is a tough pick because they have played so poorly recently. But golly, when you look at their lineup, mm-hmm. Eric Staal is their number one center. Mikko Koivu is their number two center. Martin Hanzel, if he plays like Martin Hanzel, is their number three center. He was the number one center for a long time in Arizona. They got a guy named Joel Eriksson Ek, who has played pretty – a rookie. He's played decently. He's their fourth guy. But if he doesn't work out, Charlie Coyle's played center. Eric Hall has played mm-hmm. center. I think Zucker's even played center at some point. I mean, they have all these guys who have played center. They're so deep down the middle, and they're fast. I mean, Halla can skate. Zucker can skate. All these guys, they need to just kind of regroup.
Just get it together.
Mm-hmm. And get their crap together and realize, hey, we were, you know, which team are we? Are we the garbage team from the last month, or the one that was running away with the division until the bottom fell out?
What's the sort of series where, especially for a team like Minnesota, where game one could be so huge?
Yes.
Because if they go out and lose, and that doubt is in their head again, you know, and it's that's a tough one. It's a tough series to pick.
You're right. It mentally, really it's hard to overcome those mental blocks sometimes. And so, yeah, I'm actually looking forward to watching this series because I just feel like even though it could maybe be a little low scoring here and there, I think that it's got a potential to go the distance, go seven.
I'll give this one a shot. I'll watch game one, and if I kind of keep getting that vibe that it's going to be kind of eh.
You're out.
You're bailing.
I'm going to bail on the series.
I'm going to pick Minnesota, by the way. So I'm picking Minnesota. I don't feel great about it, but center depth is center depth.
Yeah, you're right.
I am not going to make this a consensus. I'm picking St. Louis. I just think that hot finish to the season.
Oh, you're right.
Guys that they've got, the addition of
Jake
Allen,
Jake Allen's been playing great.
I just I think they can do it. I think they can win this series against a Minnesota team that just seems like they ran
out of gas right now.
Fragile.
Yeah, I'm going with St. Louis.
All right, and now the moment everyone's been waiting for, patiently for 49 minutes.
That means we have like 11 minutes to talk about this.
We're not on the, yeah, we're not on the money.
We've talked about the Blackhawks off and on too. Like we've hit on like Ryan Hartman and Joel Quenneville. It's not like we've completely ignored them anyway. So if you think we haven't done enough Blackhawks talk yet, you're not listening.
No, we definitely have.
Yeah,
I wanted to know who in here thinks Nashville is going to win a series.
Nobody.
All right.
No.
So,
but with that in mind, they have potential.
It's not like we'd be shocked
though.
If they did.
No.
It's just,
I'm picking
Chicago.
Let's do this. Everyone knows we both podcasts talked about the Hawks all year. Let's give our arguments for why Nashville could win this series.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and start. I think that Nashville is, like Scott mentioned, they're a tremendous team at even strength. They've got a ton of talent on that team. And a lot of guys that a lot of national hockey fans haven't heard of, your Arvidsons, your Yarncrocks, that's still – I say his name wrong all the time, but I still love it kind of thing. They've still got your PK Subans. Pekka can find his form. If he can do that.
If his hip doesn't fall off.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, I think there are so many guys on this team that can. There's so many guys on the team that can contribute. And that's not even getting to guys like Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis, who are both awesome players, too. This team has so much talent and so much depth. And Peter Laviolette's been around the block a few times. So
did you say Philip Forsberg yet?
I haven't. See, there you go.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think he almost goes without saying just because he's so freaking good. Like, unbelievably good. Like, I really think Nashville has the talent to, you know, pull this off. And I think we still have questions about the Blackhawks defensively. Like, are they quick enough to get into position to stop Nashville if they start pushing the tempo a little bit? We saw it when they played in the playoffs a few years ago that Nashville came out and hit them in the mouth and immediately started pushing. And the Blackhawks had to scramble to adjust, and they did win the series, but they took a great shot from Nashville. And I think Nashville is better now than they were in that series.
Well, we've seen the trend from the Hawks in recent years, too, of starting the playoffs very slowly and sort of waiting until game three, game four to sort of get into gear. That cannot happen in this series. If they get down 2-0 in Nashville, I think it's over. There's a reason I picked the Predators to win in Stanley Cup. Like I said earlier in the podcast, they had their struggles early. They've had some, you know, misleading losses here and there. This team can win a Stanley Cup. Pecorine, as you mentioned, if he can play at the All-Star level, we've seen him play for a lot of his career, they can certainly win it. And if they, you know, they've got some young and experienced playoff-wise forwards, but if those guys can put together playoffs like the regular seasons, Nashville could go very far. So I do think the Hawks are going to win the series, but it's not a sure thing by any means. The Hawks just have the experience. They've got the talent. I think they've outperformed a lot of our expectations this year. And I think you've got some hungry young players on the Blackhawks that want to prove themselves in the playoffs. So I think that's going to give them the edge. But Nashville could certainly win this and could certainly, in my opinion, even win the Western Conference.
We're looking for reasons the Predators can win this series.
Yeah.
And I look at Nashville's roster, and two jump out to me. One, and both have to do with depth. First is just quality depth up front. Actually, up front and in the back. But when you look at their top line, you got Forsberg, Johansson, and Victor Arvidsson. I mean, three producers. I mean, they produce offense, right?
Yep.
But then you go to the second line and you think, well, can their second line really match up even a little bit with, like, you know, a really like the Hawks' second line? You got James Neal in there, and then obviously I think it'll be Mike Fisher in the middle, but then Craig Smith. You go down to the third line. I mean, that's not a bad line. Any line has James Neal on it, not a bad option, right? You go down to the third one, I think that's where they're going to probably put Colin Wilson, seems like he scores a goal every time he plays the Blackhawks for whatever reason. So you got him, P.A. Parenteau, not a bad player. Third line player.
Always a scrap heap guy.
Yeah,
but always seems to put up big numbers.
Absolutely.
Or good
so,
numbers.
You know, and fourth line is a fourth line, basically. Cody McLeod, those kind of guys. PK Subban's on their second pairing.
Mm-hmm. Which is ludicrous.
It is. But, I mean, you also have Ryan Ellis, who's out there. A lot of this is going to come down to health. I know they have some health issues that we don't know about necessarily yet. Who's going to play and who's not. But you have to assume that since it's starting on Thursday, probably most of those guys are going to play. Then we go to goaltending depth. All right, you mentioned Pekarinen's hip mm-hmm. might fall off. Well, if it does, I can't pronounce the guy's name. Is it Yussi Saros, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's been pretty darn good this year when he's had a chance. So, you know, even if Rene falters, they maybe have a second option there that they could go to kind of, you know, stem the tide a little bit.
Yeah, I guess the part of it is you compare this Hawks team to previous ones, and they're not as deep probably in some ways, at least in the lines. And I wonder how Quinville's going to use the defenseman, because I think you have a deeper six defenseman than
you did last year.
Recent years, yeah, than even in 15 maybe. It's just how is he going to utilize it? Because he usually starts turning off defensemen, you know. Is he going to pull away from Campbell or Ren Riemsdyk? The Seabrook pairing hasn't been amazing.
No.
Does that even make the most sense, you know? And I know that's what they turned to in 15, the Jarmelson or the Keith Jarmelson pairing, you know, Oduya Seabrook. And, yeah, I guess a lot of my questions are on that end, where I think the Predators match up in a lot of ways. And how's Quinville going to use that fourth line, where in the past he's thrown a Shaw with a Kruger and whomever, and had someone that's sometimes even matched up against the top line. So I think this is more of a case where he's going to throw Taves line maybe against that top Predators line, at least when they're the United Center. I guess I'm curious how to see how those matchups start falling, because I think the Predators can match the Blackhawks in a lot of ways in depth, and matchups can be such a difference in these series. And I think the Blackhawks have shown at times this season where they can be the superior team, but other times, and even last month since the trade deadline, like, a lot of the numbers haven't been positive, and some of those depth issues. And how's Anisimov come back? And all those.
I was going to say that's a big one. That's another health.
So I guess thing right if there. Everything's equal, I mean the Predators have that shot, and then it's. I guess at the end of the day, I still think Crawford's the better goalie. So, but if Rene's up to the task and all those things, and I guess does home ice? I mean, does home ice matter, or does that? I mean, are those factors important here in the playoffs? And yeah, I don't know.
They haven't been recently, right? I mean, typically they haven't. Really
I would
mattered.
Think that if the Predators had home ice, I'd be thinking about the series a little bit differently. Just yeah. considering the way that they've gone out of their way to sell and create this rivalry, and they've done a hell of a job. With mm-hmm. Nashville fans believe
right.
that the Hawks give a crap about them.
Yeah, yeah.
They truly believe that. I've been there for three games, and it is an intense atmosphere. So I think had this been in Nashville, that would have been an advantage. I do think more often than not, it's not. Yeah. I mean, you probably
the Predators
prefer
were finished under .500 during the regular season on the road.
Mm-hmm. And the Hawks were awfully good at home this
yeah.
year.
Yeah,
the Hawks also set a road win record too, though.
Yeah, you're right.
That's something we have to keep in mind here. That depth, I think, that Scott was mentioning that the Blackhawks have this year is a big part of the reason why they've been so much better on the road, because they don't get hemmed into horrible matchups on the road like they did last season. They can still roll enough lines to where you can't just focus on shutting down one, because then you're letting a guy like Taves or Schmaltz or Panic or whomever. You allow that line to thrive when you try to shut down the Kane line now. So that's an advantage for the Blackhawks on the road, too. And so I think even if they didn't have home ice advantage, I think I'd still probably go Blackhawks even in that instance, because they've got so much success on the road this year.
And the adjustments, too. I think where Quinville's done it
yes.
great in the past is that he's made adjustments throughout the series where they have struggled early on, and he's cut back on guys that he's felt that just weren't necessary on the ice. And mm-hmm. you know, I don't think he's afraid to do that with whoever. And you know, I'm thinking back in 13, it was with Seabrook even, where he got his ice time cut and
yep.
and Letty. And so I wonder too how that's going to affect, because he always seemed to find the right depth, right? You know, that fourth line always seemed to figure itself right. out, and I wonder if it's there, because you have a lot of guys who seem similar, but
you
you're not dealing
with Shaw,
Kruger,
this
and, yeah,
yeah,
now it's
Desjardins
and Yurko and Hinostroza, and down the line where it's just finding that mix, or because that fourth line's been so key to what they've done every
yeah.
time that they've made a
right.
run where those lines been utilized in defensive yeah. zone against top teams. And
what's nice though is that they've got with Tutu, Desjardins, Hinostroza, Yurko, that fourth line can look a lot of different ways mm-hmm. depending on opponent.
True.
So if they're up against St. Louis next round, assuming they move on, you got Tutu and Desjardins there to
if there's
push
the
against
physical
the physicality
aspect.
If
right.
you're playing a quick team like Minnesota, you got Hinostroza and Yurko
yeah.
in there that can skate
That's
with
true.
Those guys. So
yeah.
it gives them a lot of versatility on that fourth line, which which I like. Yes, it's not solidified yet, and you don't know this is it, period, end of story, right. But there's a ton of options. And you know, we give Joel a lot of options. He's going to do good things with them. So.
Well, in 15, it was with, I mean, Desjardins, Teravainen, Vermette, all those guys were scratches early round, yeah, even Nashville. Right. It's, he eventually figured it out, and now I think at some point you'll see Hayden, Tutu, Desjardins, Yurko, Aaron Astros. I think you'll see
a lot of
those guys
in there, I think. That's kind of what in my column for the Athletic today, I was kind of looking at that with the rookies, and I mean, we know for sure three of them at least are going to start out the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Maybe four with Hayden. I mean, Hayden may be thrown in that mix. That's four rookies in your starting lineup in the playoffs. But it might not stop there. I mean, Hinostroza certainly could get into a playoff game or two or more. That's mm-hmm. five. Does Forsling maybe get in there? He hasn't been. Obviously, he was not ready for the NHL right away.
Well, I think Kempney's not considered a rookie.
He's not really a rookie, but he's a first-year player.
There hasn't been a time, I think, in the last 6 years I was looking at, where they haven't at least turned to one defense, whether it's
right.
been
they didn't even go
injury
just
or
six guys,
suspension.
Right.
Or Sheldon Brookbank got some games in 13, and then Gustafsson and Al Svedberg and all these guys down the line of all
and Roosevelt.
I think there was 1 year they used eight. I think it was eight or nine a couple of years ago. They ended up, I think at some point, someone, whether it's injury or suspension or somebody, you'll see Kepney or Forsling or,
They may even sign Runblad and bring him back.
You mentioned TVR.
I actually had that thought the other day.
You mentioned TVR and Campbell as guys who could potentially come out. Do you think Johnny Oduya could be a guy that could come out? He hasn't like shown that he's a guaranteed top four guy
since
he's been here.
I think since he's been here, he's also been wink, wink, like, yeah, you're not totally healthy. Let's sit some games out.
Yep.
I think like the whole team, they've been playing at about 80%.
I think that's fair. But I also
just
don't
get hurt pace.
Yeah. I think the penalty kill stuff's big for them too, where they got him because they didn't trust as many of those guys mm-hmm. on the PK.
And he's always seemed to find another level in the playoffs.
Completely agreed on that front too. I'm just saying, I don't think he's guaranteed top four. I think that if he shows it in the playoffs, that's obviously completely different. Yeah. He has in the past. I'm interested to see if he struggles. Is Joel going to be willing to pull the plug on him and plug somebody else into that top four spot? That's, to me, another question I'm very fascinated by the answer to.
Do you guys like Caro offensively at center as much as Shaw when he was there in 2013? Because that's the question. Mm. When you look at the center, we talk about center depth earlier. You got to love Taves, obviously. You know, great center. Anisimov does a great job in the second line. Then what? You basically have two fourth line centers is the way I look at it. You have two Krugers, sort of.
I think Kruger's played all right offensively as of late.
He's picked it up over the last month or so.
He's picked it up, but he's not Antoine Vermette. Like when Vermette was playing really well when he came over here, he's not. He definitely was not offensively what Shaw was before.
I've been saying it all year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If Schmaltz could win a faceoff,
that would help.
He would be the third line.
But I also think that would hurt the top line to have him away from Taves and Panic.
Schmaltz is the reason why I think the Blackhawks, like, I was starting to believe in this team, because that top line wasn't good, you know? Like, it wasn't anything, and Schmaltz solidified what that
kinda
is.
Kind of helped it. I mean,
no, I think it was the biggest difference.
I think Taves played a big role in that.
I think Kane can do whatever he wants with whomever. Taves needs a little bit of push, you know.
Schmaltz was a different player
when he came back from the AHL.
I think Schmaltz opens a lot of space up for Panic too, and enables him to get to dirty areas because he can handle the puck so well, and he's so precise with his passes that it just enables you to get to spot. I will find you. Bam, goal. I mean, that's what Schmaltz does. And to Scott's point, I think that really helped open that first line up.
I don't think I've ever seen a player be so different from a stint in Rockford in my life.
God, that's
a guy
so
good. That's a good point.
A complete non-factor.
Yes.
And his first, like, wow, this guy needs a year or two down there of conditioning, seasoning, rather. Comes back and is a difference maker right away and has not looked back.
Yeah. I was at that first Rockford game when he was down there, and it was the first shift, like, it was, he burst through the neutral zone and he had the speed and nearly scored like 5 seconds in the game. It was like, whoa. I just watched him for three months and nothing. And he scored, I think, one or two goals that game, and probably could have had three or four, and it was just like something just clicked. And so I don't know if it's, you know, it's a kid who's been told you're great. You're great.
Yeah, and, humbling.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe something.
He wasn't shooting the puck before he went.
Yeah, but
down
he never.
He wasn't shoot ever. He was like he was a little pass, and then finally he came back. When he came back that first game, I think he scored a goal either in his first game or second game back, and it was like, oh hey, he can shoot the puck too.
He was making drop passes in the shootout.
You remember when you were pounding the table earlier? I kept doing that this season. Every time we would talk about Nick Schmaltz, and I was just like, shoot the puck. I felt like a meathead in the upper deck yelling shoot the puck, but he needed to.
Yeah, that was a different level of, oh my God, dude, please pull the trigger.
And as soon as he came back, he started doing it, and lo and behold.
And it kind of opened up the rest of his game as well. Then he started feeling more comfortable. He got a couple goals in there, and then it started coming out.
I bet Scott got sick of my report cards every time I would mention Nick Schmaltz. I always used the word be assertive.
Yeah, there you go.
He came back, and boom, it happened. And
it's crazy what confidence can do.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Well, he plays so well in a small space. Like, he understands how to get himself open, how to get you open. Like, it's just what he can do with the puck. And I've heard even when he played for the Mission and growing up was that there's a 10-foot radius where he plays as well as anyone, where he understands space and time and all those things.
Where
and
guys are going to be.
Absolutely. And I think it's benefited Taves because I think Taves plays off of players like that where Kane and Panarin work so well apart where it can be this cross-ice game. And I think when you put Taves and Kane back together, it didn't click because Taves needs someone supporting him like that and someone to open him up. And I think that's worked out well. And then Panics kind of fit in. And I mean, it's weird to think this season wouldn't be where it was for the Blackhawks if it wasn't for Richard Panik or Marian Hossa or Ryan Hartman. As much as Kane and Panarin, all those guys.
We haven't even talked about Hossa yet.
Who they've needed to be. It's these guys who have stepped up and put Quinville in this category for having this amazing coaching here, because I don't think any of us had Panik penciled in for, 23 goals? Or Hossa for, 25 or 26?
Mm-hmm.
Hartman almost for 20, so it's...
Well, I'm glad we started this conversation, because before we wrapped up, I wanted to just sort of go through and assign our season awards, and I have a number of categories here. Just based on our conversation, I think we're picking a Rookie of the Year is Nick Schmaltz.
Yes.
We all agree there?
Could make an
Ryan
argument
Hartman's
for
got
Ryan
an argument
Hartman.
Too.
I am going to stick with Schmaltz, though, because I really think that he's the straw that stirs the drink and has enabled them to really utilize their depth in the second half of the season. So I'm going to
have a second half player of the year, maybe? Because I think Hartman overall is the
frustration over the dumb penalties and kind of the way he's kind of like gone up and down quality wise in the second half, I feel like kind of cancels Schmaltz's first half out for me a little bit, so I'm going to stick with Schmaltz.
I'm going to go with Hartman because of his versatility. Like, basically, this was the guy that when we came into this season, it was like, he has to replace Shaw. And he's done that. Like, he's completely replaced Shaw and maybe then some. Like, he's maybe even, you can make an argument, he's a better player than Shaw as far as, like, overall type of thing. He does make some silly penalties here and there.
But that's been a recent trend, though. Up until this month,
he really worked
that
on it.
Game,
yep.
He had not done that.
Right.
And then from that game on, he's been taking some dumb penalties.
He's played on all four lines.
Yep.
He's played center for two games at least. He played well enough where they at least wanted to take a look at that. You know, so I think the versatility, he almost scored 20 goals. Replace Shaw for me. That it's Hartman as a big picture.
Sure, and well, he also gave the Hawks what they lack, that a guy who can play physically and score.
Right,
and Panik has done that too a little bit. But you know, Schmaltz is a great luxury to have. But there's a lot of guys with similar skill sets. Hartman filled the hole that was left when Shaw left, and I think you can say he's at least as good as Shaw without much of an argument the other way.
Yep.
I think Hartman, too, for me, just the overall. And the fact that he doesn't play, like, it wasn't power play time, or it wasn't like he was producing, given these opportunities where he had almost 20 goals at even strength and that versatility. I think Schmaltz is the difference to why the Blackhawks took that jump. But when you look at the full season, second half player of the year, I'd maybe give the Schmaltz. It's the full Rookie of the Year, the fact that Hartman stayed up and did stay out of the box for such a long portion, because that's probably why he got to stay in the NHL these early in the year, was that he didn't take penalties for the first 20, 30 games at that rate. And I think that'll still be a concern going forward for the rest of his career. But the fact that I didn't think Hartman was going to put it together like this, considering what I'd seen in Rockford and just the penalty issues. And just, you know, like you didn't know. Like, this was a first-round pick who didn't look like he was on – the trajectory to scoring 20 goals or
that,
being
that
an
is so true. I mean, there was I remember there was one game I went to cover Rockford last year when Bickle got sent down there, and it was actually in Grand Rapids, and I was sitting next to a member of the Hawks front office, and we were talking, and like in the third period, there was a play where Ryan Hartman like got a penalty in the third period. I think the Rank Rockford was winning the game, and anyway, he picked up a penalty in like late in the third period. And play is like continuing to go, and he's chasing the referee, like literally around the entire rink, and the front office guy's going, "What is he doing? Like, what is he doing? Like, why are you doing that? You know?" And it's just like I'm like, "Oh my god, I've literally never seen a player do that in my entire." So to go from that to what we saw in the for most of this season, that takes a lot of restraint on his part and just growing up and maturing as a player.
I never thought we'd see it either, James. I said in one of our first podcasts of the year, flat out, and I think I'm quoting directly, Ryan Hartman can't play.
Yep.
Because the first couple games of the preseason, he was a disaster. Couldn't get out of his own way. Yep. And this felt like his last chance, much like Mark McNeil.
It really did, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same kind of deal, and man, he pulled it.
They needed him to do this, and he did it. Yeah. That's for me. That cinches
and
it.
He deserves respect for that. I mean, a lot of people didn't see it coming. All right, let's move on from rookie. Let's go. I think the answer is obvious, but maybe we say instead of besides Duncan Keith, which defenseman has impressed you the most this year? It could be maybe not Keith, but no. I'm always going to go with Hjalmarsson because I think he's criminally underrated. Throughout the league, I think people in town have finally started to realize how valuable he is. But I feel like he has just sacrificed his body more this year than ever.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. That's the dude. If I had to pick, there's a one goal lead with 10 seconds left in game 7, and it's number 2 or number 4 out there. I'm going with number 4. I think he's the best defensive defenseman they've had in probably 20 years.
Yeah. No, yeah, Hjalmarsson's special. I guess it's always hard because even today I threw one of those polls up on Twitter on who's the MVP of the team. And,
oh, we'll get to that.
And I wanted to put a defenseman in. At the end of the day, Duncan Keith played 4 more minutes than anyone on the team. I looked at all the underlying statistics, and it's always Duncan Keith plays this game that's always at a certain level, and even when it's not that like the elite, he's still. But one of the best defensemen in the league.
And it's so easy to take it for granted because
yeah.
we see it every night yep. and we're just like used to it. And whenever it varies from that and it gets a little like a tick worse, what's wrong with Keith? Oh my God, the world is coming to an end. He is so consistent,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
All the time. For me, defenseman, what's the category again?
I just said best defenseman.
Yeah. Best of other than Keith.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Because the one that like actually impressed me maybe the most from like last year to this year was actually TVR, and I might set the world on fire on this one. Like people will be like, no, you gotta be. I still hear all these complaints about TVR, but I gotta say like from last year to this year, just simply moving him from the left point to the right point and making him more comfortable, and also moving him from the second pairing to the third pairing as a young guy where he's in a spot now where he should have been last
yeah.
year. And I think that he has actually come a long way, this year. And I mean, he's starting to find areas where he can kind of, where he feels comfortable pinching up a little bit and adding a little bit of offense. He's buzzing the net, occasionally. As a defenseman, not getting trapped down there, I think that he's come a long way. As far as best defenseman, I'm going to agree with you on Hjalmarsson for that, for sure, other than Keith.
I would have to agree on Hjalmarsson. Just his ability to play at either point, I think, has been really valuable to the Blackhawks and has allowed them to do a lot of different things with their defensive pairing. So I'd probably go with him. But then you were talking about Duncan Keith's – or Scott was, sorry. Talking about Duncan Keith's consistency. You know he was the only guy that had a point against Nashville in all 5 games they played this season?
Yeah.
I found that out yesterday and just blew my mind that it was him and only him that did it. I was like, wow. Like, you don't realize how much Duncan Keith contributes on offense until you start looking at the numbers and you're like, holy crap, he activates a lot and gets a yep. lot of their offense going. It's staggering to me that Duncan Keith, I know he's won a couple Norris trophies, and he should be in that conversation every freaking year because he's so consistent. But I love me some Nick Hjalmarsson. I'm like you, Jay. I got a thing for him. He's fantastic, and I think he is kind of underrated, at least nationally.
I want to comment on what you said about TVR, too, and I think that you and I sometimes unfairly get.
I really hammered him last year too, in the playoffs because he just didn't. I didn't think he had a very good playoff series.
And I'll speak for myself, and James obviously speak. You guys all speak for yourselves, but for me, it was always he was getting unwarranted trust. It wasn't so much that I thought he sucked, but it was, why is he up here? Why is he getting the minutes he's getting? What is he showing? And it was sort of a, I felt like an undeserved love from Q. Q sees things
that we don't
that I'll
see.
Never see, obviously. And I'm not saying Quenneville's an idiot or anything, but I was having trouble understanding the level of trust Van Riemsdyk was getting. So I think that I get sort of put in a place of like a TVR hater. Not at all. Right. And I think you're what you
I
said
was
is
the
totally
same
right.
exact way. On Twitter, everyone was like, oh, you're just hating on this guy. And I got to a point in the playoffs, I kept asking Q about TVR, and he was kind of getting a little really defensive. Like, he was our best player in the playoff. I'm like, he was? Really? Like,
okay.
But, it's a great way to put it, Jay. How did he earn that much? That big of a role, that much trust or whatever, I didn't see it. But like this year, I think I've started to see a little more what Q was talking about, just because I think he's more comfortable on the right point.
All right, well, let's wrap it up with Scott's question. You had it on Twitter today. Who's the Blackhawks MVP? Who were your candidates?
I put Kane, Keith, Crawford, and Panarin.
Okay.
I'm going to say that with some of his struggles in the second half and the fact that he missed time with the appendectomy, I'm kind of removing Corey Crawford. He would have been my pick, I think, if it hadn't been for the appendectomy, just how well he played. I have to go with Patrick Kane. He, especially the second half of the season, dude has been out of this world, playing like he did last year, makes the entire offense go, can do anything with anybody. Doesn't matter who his line mates are, the dude is scoring. Drives your offense, and you got to do that in this league. I'm going with Patrick Kane.
I got it. Well, I'm going to go Kane as well, just because, like, from the old school standard, I mean, he, like, lit the world on fire offensively again, like you said, especially in the second half of the season. So how can you not go with him? That said, you could make a really off-the-wall argument that would make people just smack their heads and say that Jonathan Toews may be your MVP. Because when you look at when he's, like they... I guess they were winning. They won a lot when he was struggling. So I guess you could get the counter argument is that. Like,
they started rolling when he got hot, though.
But they started rolling. Yeah. Like when he started rolling, they started rolling, you know? And then it gets hand in hand. And you say it's, you know, a lot of that is schmaltz, and I agree.
Well, I didn't say it was a lot of it.
I agree with you. Like there was something missing from that top line. Yeah. And schmaltz did end up, you know, kind of becoming that left wing that they'd run like through like 15 guys in a year and a half trying to find replace Brandon Saad. Finally they found a guy who did it, but I mean it's hard to overlook the fact that like when they had that ridiculously hot streak that basically won them the Western Conference, Toews got hot at that point and he was scoring like every night and he was setting up stuff. So you know, from an off the wall aspect, you could look at that and say he's still in that discussion as MVP, but you got to go with Patrick Kane.
I guess I go the other way almost too. Or
you want to trade Toews?
No, that wasn't. I don't think the Blackhawks playoffs or the team they've become without what Corey Crawford did early in the season. Where if he's not as good in the first month, this team, you know, like there were so many one goal games, so many games where this team was still
where they got hammered over the head in possession,
footing. Well,
still won.
I think that first month or two decided what, like how easily they got into the playoffs. You know whether, you know, or ultimately Corey Crawford wasn't the difference them winning the conference and putting them where they were in the end. But I think if that beginning goes awry, it's a different season.
You're in a different you're in a hole at that point.
Yeah, and that would have been bad for this team. So yeah, I guess it's tough because where Crawford ended up and his numbers dipped, and he actually played well the last month or so, but he was out and.
Couple real bad games in there.
I see the Crawford Kane argument more than anyone else, just because I think Crawford was as key to what this team did early, and Kane was key to what this team did in the second half. But I guess when you can't ignore what Kane does in overall season, and he's second in points again, and certainly pushed McDavid there at the end, and all the overall numbers. So I think that leads to it. But I think. If you're dividing the season or putting an importance on what happened, I think what Crawford did early in the season was vital to this team even making the playoffs and, you know, just being in the position they ended up into.
The only thing that might work against Corey, and it's nothing that he could change at all, is when he did get hurt, who stepped up? Scott Darling. Yep. I mean, Scott Darling had an amazing season for a quote-unquote backup goaltender. I mean, did he finish like with around 930 save percentage, something like that? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously he's not the number one, and he doesn't get as many opportunities to play. That's pretty impressive.
It was 924.
It was 924. That's still – that's a high save.
And still behind a defense that allows a lot of quality scoring chances,
correct,
too.
Yep. So I mean, he played well.
I think he is going to get close to, if not starter money, to play somewhere. I get that vibe from him.
Hold that thought.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to go with Corey Crawford as my MVP, actually, just because of, Scott, what you said.
Scott talked you into it.
The first part of the season, and I know you guys.
Get a high five?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
You guys don't get to hear the broadcast as often as we do. Eddie O said 12, 13 goalie wins.
That's a high
number.
That's a huge
number.
Take those wins away from what they got.
Exactly.
Where are they?
That's 26 points.
Right.
I mean, so with that, the way he played the first half of the year was superhuman. And yeah, he came down to earth and was a very good starting goalie
right
down the stretch. Great, fine. You know what I mean?
After losing his appendix.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt what Patrick Kane does is incredible. We talked about taking things for granted. I think we're finally at that point with Patrick Kane where it's just assumed that he's going to put up 80, 90 points every year, and that's going to be the end of it. I saw Patrick Kane do some things I could not believe this year. But without Corey Crawford for that first month and a half, the Hawks are in a giant hole. So I'm going to give it to him. Now, back to what you were saying about Scott Darling. We talk about this all the time. Do you guys foresee a scenario where Scott Darling is back next year with the Hawks as the number one starter and Corey Crawford is elsewhere?
Well, you know, I've actually been talking about that loosely with Scott in our podcast for a while, and he's always like, it's gone from, this was like a year and a half ago when Darling first burst on the scene. They've always had the cap problems, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, wheels are always turning this bald head up here, and I'm just like, okay, like, could we see a scenario where he signs for like $2 million or something, or they keep him at, what was he making, $500,000 or something, and then they trade Crawford, then you free up like $5.5 million. I mean, that seemed a little far-fetched like a year and a half ago. I think it's getting to be more realistic potentially now, and I think you've even mentioned it. He's rolling his eyes now.
I guess it's the
You've mentioned it a couple times, though.
I think it's stupid not to think of, right? Like, in some world, I mean, he's the local guy. He's played really well. He's cheaper, a lot of the factors. It's just
he hasn't won two cups.
Depending on what the Blackhawks do this playoffs, if you ride Crawford again, how do you and especially the organization is very loyal to its elite core players, right? I mean,
yeah.
I think Corey Crawford's legendary if he leads them to another cup. And at the end of the day, $6 million, it's a lot to the Blackhawks. But in the goalie spectrum, what's he's 8th or 9th, 10th in cap hit now? And it's even by the end of his contract, he'll be like midway. So just because maybe you mismanaged the cap in other places, I don't know if goalie is. And I get all the reasons for Darling. It's just Crawford's still at an elite level. He's 32, so I think you still have some more years. And he I guess I'm curious to see, you know, if he pushes them to another cup, I don't see how you walk away from him or walk away that the fact that he's still at the top of his game.
The only – and 2 years ago I would have agreed with you, but when I saw them trade Brandon Saad, I had the realization that they'll trade almost anyone not wearing 1988
as long as you get something back for it, too. In this case, I guess what you would get back is cap space, which they desperately need.
Well, especially now with Panarin's bonus.
Right. Yo, exactly. We're in, that's what, $2.5 million basically more, just the overages.
I think the overage is 3.6.
Well, yeah, but of that 3.6, he cost them like 2.5.
And then that's
on
top of the fact that he's getting a pay bump next year, too.
Right. I think I figured it out last night. It was something like he's going to make something like 7 point something other million more than he made this year.
Good Lord.
In cap hit.
That's a lot.
Because he made like 8.13, I think was his cap hit this year. And next year, when you count the overages and the raise, it's like over $7 million more to keep Panarin. But as Mark Potash pointed out from the Sun-Times to me on Twitter last night, worth every penny. You know, like it's gonna hurt, and you're gonna have another cap crunch type of thing. But you gotta keep a guy like that.
Well, we'll see how much of a cap crunch it is because it's expansion draft. It's who they lose in expansion draft. It's what the cap is at. If it's at $76 million, they're gonna ride these rookies a lot more, and I think next year you may add a few more guys. I think DeBrincat, I think a few of these guys will get looks. I think Hayden maybe starts the year there. I think Kempney's there instead of Oduya for a full season if they re-sign him. But
Shalunov,
yeah.
Any chance with him, or is he like a couple
like
years
he's
away?
Sounds like he's staying in the KHL for a few more years. But, yeah, I think they're going to – younger guys. I think Panic's the most interesting one that happens financially this season.
Well, and I think
off-season.
The Panarin's bonuses are going to be what cost you Richard Panic.
I agree.
Because that bonus is almost exactly what you'd probably have to pay him.
I guess it could be. Because I guess they put him – I mean, he's restricted, so yeah. It's arbitration possibly. I mean, it's so rare that these go to arbitration.
Or do you trade him like you did Andrew Shaw and get a pretty solid return because the team knows they want to sign him for however many years?
I wonder if the league is sold on Panic yet.
I think there's a risk, though. I think for the Blackhawks, it makes sense. It's for everyone else, I'm curious because I think he still gets a small deal to get him done. What's a year or two he has
was
left?
Was Yurko Panic protection? You know what I mean?
Oh, like, God, I hope not.
Well, I know.
Oh, if it was, woo.
Yeah, oh, Hedry loves his Yurko. Don't even start
guys,
with this.
He has not gotten a fair shake yet.
Oh, come on.
Come on.
He's
playing fourth line minutes. He doesn't get to play the top line
Panic
like
played
Panic.
Fourth line. Panic
he couldn't crack the lineup in friggin' Detroit.
Panic played third line minutes.
Oh, Hedry loves his
Panic. In Detroit, he could not crack the lineup. Come on, man.
Hedry saw him in
Detroit. He's built like Panic. He can skate. He's shown some ability. He hasn't put the puck in the net yet. That's the big thing.
He did once.
Yeah, one time.
I'm 2 inches taller than Jose Altuve. It doesn't mean I can win an American League MVP award.
Hey, you're selling yourself short, pal.
Oh, that was a dad joke.
We'll remember this.
I didn't even mean that.
Tomas Yurko has 20 goals next year, we're revisiting this conversation.
All right, yeah, we'll be at this table.
I'll buy you a new fedora if he scores 20 goals.
I will take you up on that.
Okay.
I will take you up on that.
We have witnesses on this podcast. I'm buying Hedger a fedora next year if Tomas Yurko scores 20 goals.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun, guys. Thank you for coming to the glamorous.
NBC Tower. Yeah.
Definitely glamorous. You got to go glamorous.
I used to work here. Now I work at Prudential. James works here now. So it's full. Same security lady.
Yeah.
That's
I'm like,
crazy.
Do you remember me? No.
She sees a lot of people in a given day.
Yeah, man. I know. It's true. It's true. But yeah, thank you guys so much for coming. Follow Scott and Brian on Twitter. Give out your handles because I don't have memorized.
Mine is just at Brian Hedger.
Creative.
By Scott Powers.
I like that one.
Beautiful.
You're at James Naveau, and I'm at Jay Zawoski 670. This will be posted on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast link, and you guys will put it on the Athletic site as well. So it'll be easy
Absolutely.
To find.
Yeah.
Make sure you download
Two
it from
places.
Both sources.
It's like a super cast.
It is.
It really is.
Subscribe, rate, review if you like us. And we'll talk to you soon on the Madhouse Podcast. I don't know what your guys' schedule is.
We're every post game. There
awesome.
I always look at cues.
Wow,
I always look at Scott for my cues, and he just kind of gave me the no.
Well, he's mad at you for pounding the table and criticizing small players. And
yeah,
there's a lot of resentment.
I think that
there.
Last
I feel
one,
it.
That last pounding the table may have blown somebody's eardrums out.
Yeah, I'll send you an invoice for this. This little thing here
it's
that
gone
you broke.
Now.
Yeah,
it's
we're gonna have to do another Patreon account just to pay
you know
for
what?
That.
We should say thank you to our patrons on Patreon because without them, this does not happen.
Agreed.
The official Madhouse laptop, official Madhouse mixing board, all
the
microphones, all the equipment we use to do this was thanks to the Madhouse Podcast listeners. So thank you guys. And if you'd like to donate and help out and support and just lend a hand to the podcast, it's patreon.com/madhousepod. Every cent we get goes to the podcast. We don't spend it on anything for ourselves. So it's equipment, things to make it more easy for James and I to get podcasts to you, our listeners. So we do appreciate it. Scott, Brian, thank you guys for coming. And
thanks for having us here.
Boy, the playoffs are right around the corner Thursday. Don't ask me what channel it's on.
Hey, what channel is it on?
This is my annual struggle. I just pinned it. Here's the schedule. Shut up.
Just look it up yourself.
Leave me alone.
The answer right. In the blog.
When NHL.com starts working again, look it up yourself.
Oh, yeah, and we God's will have a bracket sake. Challenge as soon as NHL.com decides to work. So as soon as we get a link and a league name, we'll let everybody know. But until then, thank you all for listening to this crazy Madhouse Athletic podcast thingy-do. We appreciate it.
See ya.